Yo, what's up, guys? Welcome into Stack and Dubs. I am your host, Chris Chin. Game two goes to the Timberwolves, evening the series up at 1-1. Honestly, I think a few things positive to go off of here. First off, we got the split, and I had hopes that perhaps the Warriors might come and keep riding the wave and come out hot and come out with that number one defense and continue locking up Minnesota. We knew that the Wolves would shoot a little bit better from three, but I thought that the Warriors might just come out on their hair on fire still, saying, hey, we don't have to just lay down. We're learning our lesson from game five against Houston. Let's just come out and take control of this series and go out and win this thing. And they showed glimpses of that, and the defense did kind of dig in later on in the game, but they obviously did not come out the gate very well. Started Quinton Post, the only 3 minutes he played, and it was just a quick minus 13, a 13-0 run for the Wolves. And yeah, again, I think the Post situation, I mean, that's just going to be kind of a wild card and maybe a Hail Mary later in the series, but I don't think you're going to see much more Quinton Post for the rest of this series and maybe not going forward beyond that. But what the Warriors did find is another big, and it wasn't Kevon Looney, who we know can give us reliable minutes and was good in game one. And you can rely on him at any point in this series because that's Mr. Reliable, especially if you're having trouble on the boards. But TJD, one of the shining stars that was unexpected, and he had good games. I think he had a career high rebounding game in the regular season against Minnesota, and really just provided something that the Warriors didn't have, and that's just a lob threat. It's vertical spacing in a lineup where Kerr obviously went to Quinton Post for his shooting spacing and finding some offense. It was TJD who provided that vertical spacing just as a lob threat and just someone who could finish around the hoop, which has been the reason why he hasn't been playing in the last few months. He hasn't been finishing well, but that was not a problem in this. 6 of 6 from the field and ended up scoring 15 points. I mean, a little misleading. He was a minus 15, but it was more important that got his confidence up as a scorer and finisher and just, found ways to impact the game on the defensive side as well. Had a monster block on Anthony Edwards, almost turned into a much more significant play in this series when Edwards went down clutching what, at least I know, I believe that was a high ankle sprain, the way he was acting, where he was holding it, the way he wasn't able to put any pressure on it. And I mean, things didn't look good for Minnesota or Anthony Edwards for a while. And I think, I don't know how you guys felt about it. Obviously, no one wants an injury and you hate to see it, especially to Minnesota's best player. At the same time, you're also feeling like, well, we lost Steph Curry and I guess this kind of evens the playing field. So you kind of get some false, I don't want to say hope, but you just kind of feel a weird way about it. And you're getting a zillion text messages and you're checking all the Twitter doctors online who are also saying this looks like a high ankle sprain. At the very least, he's going to be missing some time. And then next thing you know, he's doing plyometrics with band resisted lateral movements at the at halftime. And he is, I'm not going to say no worse for the wear because he didn't look great in the second half, but he was still one of the better, if not the best athlete on the court and was effective and good enough in this. No worse than he was through the first, call it, what is it, 6 quarters of this series. So, and that's another reason if we're digressing from here, I guess my reason for optimism is that the Warriors have done a really good job on Anthony Edwards. Maybe a lot of that is him just missing a lot of buddies at the hoop, missing a lot of open shots. And, there's a good chance that turns around and he ends up being the superstar that he is going forward. But my reason for optimism is that, obviously the Warriors are going home and you're going to get a much better effort out of the role players and the defense is not going to have as many lapses. But I just think they've done a really good job against not only Anthony Edwards, but just this Minnesota offense. It doesn't seem like they're giving up too much just penetration. I know Julius Randle got off tonight. I don't worry about that as much. I've seen Randle struggle against this Warriors team. I've seen the Warriors lock him up. He's been better as of late in the season, but that scares me a lot less than Anthony Edwards just, blowing by guys, getting to the hoop, putting us into rotation where we're just chasing wide open 3-point shooters and there's just nothing you can do about it and they're getting open shots, kind of like what they did to the Lakers all last series. It's nonstop at will. That, aside from a few lapses in this Warriors defense, and again, there's reasons for it. They were playing with house money tonight. Now they're tired. They're playing without Steph. They have a whole bunch of brand new rotations and new players playing together. Plenty of reasons to see defensive lapses. And my point is that those are correctable and those will get better. And despite all those, they still did a pretty good job on Minnesota. And Minnesota in the first half, it was a lot of just kind of second chance points. That got corrected. And when the Warriors made their run, they started rebounding a bit better. And ultimately, I think the offensive rebounding battle was even in this after Minnesota started off. I think they had like 15 second chance points in the first quarter and a half. But again, my point is, I think this Warriors defense is for real. It was not their best outing consistently throughout the night for, again, reasons we talked about, but you saw glimpses of it. And my optimism is that in these games where it goes down to the wire and it's going to be close games, in clutch time, I think Minnesota is going to have a lot harder time finding good shots outside of Anthony Edwards being a superhero, which we haven't seen yet and could still happen. But I just don't see Minnesota getting into as good of shots as the Warriors have been able to get to. Obviously, when Steph Curry's there, but I think that the Warriors are going to find buckets a little bit easier, especially in clutch time, than Minnesota. And yeah, basically, I think it's a pretty even series. I think it's pretty even. Minnesota might be a little bit better, and they have the Anthony Edwards factor. But these teams are, for what's it been now, six, seven quarters, Warriors without Steph Curry, Warriors were better, all last game. They were better for probably maybe like the second quarter and the early third quarter tonight. So I think all that being said, that they're gonna go home, get to Chase Center. Draymond Green is going to play a much harder and inspired defense than he did tonight. Jimmy Butler's gonna score more than 17 points and be a little bit more aggressive because Jimmy Butler's gassed, guys. And being able to get out of there with 34, not too strenuous minutes tonight. He's going to be back and he's going to be fine going forward. I think this was just the game where you hope that if the Warriors are going to lose, it's not going to be guys playing 38, 40 hard minutes. And it wasn't. So I think this is kind of just the mild, moderate game that the Warriors, especially Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, need just kind of get back to neutral. And then you're going to get a lot better from the role players, right? Like Pajemski, the shot's not there, but he impacted the game. He had six rebounds, six assists, two steals, but I thought he played a pretty poor game, had a couple atrocious turnovers, wasn't really impactful, and it hasn't been lately, but that's going to change. We know Pajemski still had the best plus minus on the team somehow, and especially at home where he feeds off that crowd energy, he's going to come alive at some point. Then we're looking at Moses Moody. He's going to be out of the rotation. He's playing terribly, so I don't expect him to play much better. But GP2 only played 11 minutes. You get a little bit better out of him. Didn't even score. Obviously, you have Looney still on the bench. And then we're going to get to the shining star of the night. And the reason for more optimism is that Jonathan Kuminga, after coming in and in his first few minutes looking god awful, I think he would have a miss, a turnover that led to right to a layup, had a missed two free throws and missed a couple assignments that led to just two Naz Reid wide open threes. And it's like, oh my God, here we go. And then in the next breath, he is what, 5 for 5 from the field in the first half and has closed the first half out with six straight points and makes his first eight shots of the game, ends up going 8 for 11 with 18 points and really put it together, put Rudy Gobert in the basket on one drive and just really seemed to be the spark that the offense needed to say, hey, I think with if Kuminga's going to play like this and he's just kind of found his footing and he's a little bit more in a rhythm, now this offense is going to be able to keep up with Minnesota for all the reasons we talked about with the Warriors defense earlier. I think that, hey, given Kuminga and then get just, as long as Buddy can kind of keep this flow that he's in, as long as Pajemski can start to get a little bit more efficient offensively and look to be a scorer that can finish at the rim, which we haven't seen a Pajemte real true finish in quite some time. I don't know what happened to his nice little creative decels and his float game or just any part of that paint game that was really, really nice earlier in the season. If any of that comes back, this team is going to start scoring a little bit better. This Minnesota defense is not what the Rockets were. It is much less physical. It is much less impactful. When Rudy Gobert, four-time defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert is on the court, they are worse. He is not, I mean, he provides a little bit of rim protection, but honestly, they've been worse with Rudy Gobert on the court. And it was when Gobert came out in that mid-third, when the Warriors had cut it to seven, that Gobert goes to the bench and then the Wolves finally go on a run. And that was that because the Warriors couldn't take care of the ball. Which leads me to my other point for optimism is that, hey, Warriors turned the ball over 17 times. A lot of them were just really sloppy, unforced turnovers. That will get better, I sure hope. A lot of honestly, the Warriors didn't play a very clean game, and yet they were still in this. And I guess that's me saying a lot of words to say that I just don't think Minnesota is that good. I know they're better than what we've seen. They ended up shooting, this is the game they corrected their 3-point shooting. They ended up shooting what, 16 for 37, 43% from three. Still was a game until it wasn't for the most part. And I'm not believing what I'm seeing when Minnesota scores. It just seems like a lot of broken plays, a lot of just, offensive rebounds where the defense is just not set again. It just seems like when the Warriors defense is set, determined, and focused, that this Minnesota team is just not going to put up enough points to hang with hopefully what will be an efficient enough offense between, Jimmy Butler being more aggressive, and then if Jonathan Kuminga can kind of get into that 15-point range on efficiency and maybe make some free throws, I think the Warriors have an edge here. And that's all before Steph Curry comes back, which, I mean, in my mind, I'm saying he's going to be back game six, just to kind of be realistic here. I think we're all hopeful that he can be back game five. It's pushing it. And again, with a hamstring, you just don't want to rush it. Steph said the same thing earlier today at shoot around that, hey, you just don't know these things. And if you're coming back less than 100%, you were just at a huge risk to make it worse again and just not be the same player. And obviously you run the risk long term of being out even more down the road. So you want to be at least 90%. And after a week with a grade one hamstring, I just don't know. So Warriors, I think we can steal one in honestly, at home, there's a chance they're going to be in both of these games. And if somehow you can win, let's get greedy and say you win both of these games, you go up 3-1. Now you for sure can get Steph rest in game five. And now it's going to be, what, 11 days of recovery. And I would think at that point, since the hamstring, he's going to be 90% or better and have a 3-2 lead at home where Warriors can close them out. Because I just don't think this Wolves team, with a healthy-ish Steph Curry, they can't compete. I know it was a small sample size, but Steph was loose. Steph was getting anything he wanted. And then on top of that, for all the reasons we've already talked about, I don't think this Minnesota team can keep up. So I guess let's go back to Kuminga a little bit, right? So I think the most important thing from tonight, in the short term and the long term, obviously, is the Kuminga breakout game. And I'm just really talking confidence. Like, we all know that Kuminga has this in him. He's had games like this, and he's looked like a shell of himself throughout this playoffs, throughout the last couple months. And so much of sports is just confidence. And if I ever have one critique of Steve Kerr, it's, I can see why he benched Kuminga for all the negative plays he brings, but you have to keep him involved. Otherwise, now you're basically icing out the positives that he can bring. And it's taken him, what, three, four playoff games of just atrocious contributions to finally kind of get back into a rhythm where he can contribute when you do need him now more than anything, because you just have to find some easy points. And that's what Kuminga can bring you. And the fact that, hey, hopefully we've broken that ice now. He is comfortable. He played 26 minutes. He's back in a rhythm. He's shooting the ball well. He's shooting the ball okay. He's shooting the ball the way he typically does, which is good enough when his feet are set and he's open from the outside. And then if he can keep getting to the hoop, and if he can finish against Gobert, he can finish against anybody on this Minnesota team. And if that's the case, find a way to just minimize the mistakes, right? minimize the turnovers, minimize the, there's a handful of defensive lapses, I'm not gonna lie. It wasn't great. At least he didn't foul too much in this, but if you can just find ways to dodge those bullets, maybe keep those down to maybe two or three mistakes on the defensive end that don't necessarily come back to bite you. Maybe Minnesota misses a couple of these threes or miss a couple free throws or whatever the case may be. If you can find a way to keep coming on the floor, now you're building up that confidence. The more he plays, the better he's going to get. We've seen the patterns. We've seen this in his second, his third year, where he just kind of gets a little runway to keep playing consistent minutes. And now you're getting that player that can get you to that next level. In the long term, most importantly, there's a huge Kuminga conundrum in this offseason on, do you re-sign him? Do you sign and trade him? If nothing else, this game restores some Kuminga value in the eyes of the Brooklyn Nets or whatever team might be looking for, hey, a young upside guy, which, he might be on a somewhat affordable contract and you're just trying to get off of, I don't know, a Cam Johnson, maybe. We're getting greedy here, but my point being that Kuminga has restored some of his trade value, where now you're hopefully not just losing him for nothing. You've just kind of flashed the upside in people's eyes who are all hopefully watching this game. And that's also a win in itself. But again, we're looking far too far into the future because the Warriors still have a run in them this year. And Kuminga will continue to rise his value, hopefully. Okay. I guess that's kind of where I'm at with this. So again, I think feel okay about this. We got the 1-1 split. We're back home. We have home court advantage in this series. No, we don't have Steph, but I think we've found that we are going to be in close games with this Wolves team because our defense is going to keep the Wolves somewhere around 100 or less, unless they, they break out like they did tonight and the Warriors don't show up to play in the first quarter like they didn't tonight. I don't see that happening at home. Game three is going to be rowdy. We're going to see a whole bunch of yellow shirts where everyone's going to be wearing their yellow shirts. I know I will. I hope you guys are too. And you're going to see an inspired defense that when they are inspired, when they are locked in, when they are playing with desperation, which I hope they will be going back home and after they've slept in their own beds and gotten right after not terribly hard minutes tonight, you're going to see a team that's going to hold Minnesota under 95. Under maybe even 90. Now, can we get there on offense? I think we can.
We do need to talk for a second about Draymond Green. Where do I even begin with this? I mean, okay, I guess I can see the flails, right? It's always the same flail. It's his reflex. It's not going to change. He gets fouled, he flails. Oftentimes, it hits the other guy. I don't know why he does it, but I don't think you can change that. There's no amount of therapy or talking to him or reasoning with him to convince him to control himself in a split second jerk reaction. It's just his reflex. And unfortunately, he's going to get more technicals or even flagrants when that happens. And he's running thin. He's got two tees or two flagrant points left, and he's going to miss a game. And with if we're going to have an actual run of whatever, how many more games that would be, another 20 games potentially. I don't know if he's going to make it, and he could miss a very important game for us, and that is what it is. The problem I have, and I think you guys would all agree, is what happens after the technical foul. And this is after I listen to his podcast, I listen to what he says, and I always believe that he takes accountability and that he talks to the people he needs to talk to, including Tom Izzo and his family and his loved ones. And he is genuinely ashamed and embarrassed for his actions. And he wants to be better and he wants to be a leader, which he is oftentimes one of the best leader of any team in the NBA. And he is the heartbeat and the leader of the Warriors. But he has an anger issue. He sees red. He gets a T, which was warranted. I think we saw it and we all knew it was going to be a T. And then it's him getting up and screaming in the face of the official when you just can't, everyone knows you cannot afford to get another technical, either in this game where you would just be ejected in the second quarter or for your technical points going forward. And you'd be up thin ice and you would for sure be getting another T at some point along the way. And yet it doesn't stop him from not only getting in the face of the referee, but then continuing to go on. And Steph Curry goes over, walks on his bad hamstring, and calms Draymond down, or attempts to calm Draymond down just for a moment. And then Draymond keeps on going. Steve Kerr checks in Jimmy Butler very intelligently and says, get him out of there. And Jimmy Butler pulls on Draymond's jersey and kind of pulls Draymond away, but Draymond's still jawing and still needs to be separated. Goes to the bench and then he starts yelling at the crowd and he's fired up. And we've seen this, right? You see when not only him, but you see when somebody is seeing red, they have no control of their emotions. They are likely to do anything at any moment and it's nothing else. There's no sense of rational. There's no rationality. There's no sense to it. It's just whatever their blacked out mind wants to do to get rid of this anger and release it. And that is where you can get suspended and cost us our entire season, not just this game, but the entire series, the season, everything. When your career is coming to the last couple years, Steph Curry's only got a couple chances left of this. You are potentially costing Steph Curry a chance at ring number five and immortality in the greatness of the NBA because you just cannot get your antics under control. So again, I accept the flailing. Try to stop. I accept that you just can't help that. You need to control what you can seemingly can control, but I guess you can't. And you need to be better, Draymond. I've had enough of this. We've done this enough times where I've given you so much of a leash. We've all been as patient as possible, but there are just some inexcusable antics that go on in situations like this, and this was one of them. And I'm glad that you were saved from yourself because you would have been ejected in this game. You were heading towards it, and that's enough is enough. And you can go do all the coping and things you need to. I just saw your after game interview basically saying that everyone's painting you as an angry black man, but you're successful and have a great family. And sure, while that is true, you're not a victim here, man. I'm sorry, your antics are your antics, and you need to own them. And I'm sure you'll come around, but it needs to stop, and I know it's not going to, but hey, if you're listening to this, just know that I'm asking you to please stop. Thank you. Okay, guys, don't feel too demoralized about this one. I know it's easy to convince ourselves that this was a rough one, and maybe I just have some false optimism because there was a few moments there where it looked like we might not be seeing Anthony Edwards anytime before Steph returns, and in the wrong ways in my head, I'm like, hey, this is. I'm feeling pretty good about the Warriors' chances right now. So maybe that was false optimism, but that's where I'm at. And I hope you guys are here with me too, because I'm optimistic and we are still. Oh, I'm just going to say right now, the Warriors are +250 to win this series with home court advantage. And I think that's a pretty good bet. So go ahead, unload the pocketbook, guys. Make some money. All right. I will talk to you guys Saturday for a huge game where this team is going to be that much more connected, that much more into its rotations. I just want to shout out before we go, Steve Kerr. I thought it was a tinkering game for Kerr. Obviously, there were a whole bunch of new lineups, a whole bunch of weird lineups, but in doing so, that's how you found TJD. Hey, he's going to be a weapon and just an adjustment that you can use in the series. That's how you found more minutes for Kuminga. Just kind of doing that tinkering, you're able to just, be that much better going forward, figure out who plays well with each other. And that's what we were afforded by winning the first game, is that this game we're playing with house money and you have that luxury to kind of play and see with, hey, we have nothing to lose in this game. We need to find offense. Let's find something that works. And I think they found two things that work: A, Kuminga ISOs; B, TJD, just kind of as a roller, where Minnesota just did not do a very good job rotating on the backside several times. So found that. Also found that, hey, you got to trim the rotation somewhere. And Moses Moody, you're not it right now. Gui Santos, it's. I love Gui. He does a lot of good things, but he's been pretty rough lately. And with Kuminga's emergence, you might see Gui out of the rotation. Pat Spencer, he brings you what you need in terms of being able to kind of get places on the floor and create some offense. The problem is when he was in and kind of getting some early penetration in the shot clock, there wasn't a lot of movement. There wasn't a lot of shooters around. It just didn't really lead anywhere. I'm not giving up on him. Because again, he can give you that just a little bit of just, again, a change of pace guard who can attack and kind of play make for others. But again, you're gonna have to find some shooting from somebody, and it's not Moses Moody right now. Pat Spencer's not a shooter. Gary Payton, hopefully you can kind of get some stretch from him. They tried Kevin Knox tonight, didn't get much from him, but I like the thought of, hey, maybe you find some offense here. I mean, you might see a little bit more him in this, and then you're, I think at home, you're going to get a little more Kevon Looney, depending on TJD plays, but you might get a little more Kevon Looney just to kind of steady the ship here at home. Also, you found out Quinton Post, you're not going to be able to play him probably for the rest of the series either. All right, so there we go. Steve Kerr kind of laid out what I think you also discovered this game, and we're going to be that much better for it moving forward. All right, hang tough, Dub Nation. It's always darkest before the horizon, and I see the light, and I hope you guys see it too. Don't forget, hit like, hit subscribe. I'm Chris Chin, and until next time, peace, love, and stacking dubs.